Then at 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Winnie Madikizela Mandela addressed the Million Woman March held in Philadelphia, October 25, 1997, about brave Afro-American women in history.
She was introduced by Dr. Piola Butler Dews.
And the mother of us all. She is President Namzamu Winnie Madikizela Mandela. She is the head of the African National Congress Women's League. She was born in 1934 in Bizano, in what is now a province, Eastern Cape Province. She was educated as a medical social worker, the first black social worker in South Africa. She became involved in ANC very early in her career. And at the age of 24, in 1958, she met a cool dude and married him. His name is Nelson Mandela. He was deeply involved in the ANC as an attorney and fighting against apartheid that was created by a minority white population. Winnie Mandela has always been deeply involved in all of her convictions, and she stood up for any restrictions that kept black South Africans struggling against death, destruction, and deportation. This is her way of life. And do you know that from 1962 to 1975, she was banished because of her activism? In 1964, when Nelson Mandela was imprisoned for life, when he had to be mother and father for their children, and leader of a revolution because of her continuous struggle, she was imprisoned and held in solitary confinement for 17 months in 1969. Often in the wee hours of the morning, when Winnie was in bed, tired with her two babies, the white regime would kick down her door, drag her out of bed, leaving her babies alone and in fear, crying for their mother. Winnie was beaten many times. This kind of violation occurred against her so often, she began to pack a bag and keep it up on the shelf so that when the white policeman came and kicked down the door, she would grab the bag and run out to them for them to lock her up so her babies wouldn't have to cry. And she told the neighbors, when they come to get me, you come and take my babies. Oh my God, how many times were they traumatized? How long, my God? The bogus apartheid government did not know what to do with Winnie Mandela. No matter whether they banned her, beat her, placed her under house arrest, put her in solitary confinement in prison, intense interrogation, perpetual government harassment. Oh, there were so many attempts on her life. When I was over there, I went to her old home where the revolution started, and there are bullet holes all around there where they kept trying to kill her, but they never succeeded. Oh, that was a rotten system of government. They even banished her to a white town, black town within a white town, and they had signs on the doors that said only white people can come in this way. We used to have those in this country, I remember that. But some of us were scared to go through the white doors in this country. I want you to know that Winnie Mandela went through the for white only signs, and all the black folk in the community did too. She would not allow them to defeat her. But I'll tell you something. In 1976, when the children of Soweto rose up, little children, because of the rotten system, and they were determined that our children were going to learn everything in their language. And the children marched, innocent children. And I want you to know that they were shot down like dogs. And on that day, Winnie Mandela started an even greater revolution against that unjust system. It was Winnie Mandela who kept our children before that government, who kept our need for freedom before the world, who kept Nelson Mandela's name before the world, that led to the freedom of South Africa. When I talked to Winnie, I cried and I said, oh God, what can we do to these people who would still hold our people in bondage, who still every day try to persecute her and harass her? And this sister looked at me and she said, Piola, don't worry. God will take care of them. I want you to know that the love that this woman has for all of us, for all people, is something that we don't see often. She is real. She is mother of a nation. She's mother of the world. And I ask you to listen to her and to understand that she only wants one thing. She said she wants a monument built on a hill in South Africa to honor all of those children who died. And I tell you, all 2 million of us ought to buy the soil from the house where the revolution was fought so that that monument can be built. I thank God for this moment. Oh, my sister. Oh, my mother. Oh, my friend. Winnie Madikizela Mandela, a man love.
Amanda. Dearest sisters, Sister Feli, Sister Khadija, Sister Aliyah, and thousands of other wonderful sisters here, I have no words to thank you for bringing me here to be with my family. 1 million women are a countless women. Let Amandla ring out in a mighty chant and fill the entire concourse with its power to redeem and reconsecrate the freedom lost, the freedom found. Amandla, I call. Let me hear you after me, because that is your power. The power of your call invokes your Africa and mine. It recaptures the roots lost, and the roots found, the roots reconsecrated to make us one. Sisters of Africa, brought out of slavery and Americanized, I embrace you. I celebrate you for all that you have achieved. You do not stand just yourselves today, for ancestors walk with you. You are empowered by their strength, by their suffering. I was never enslaved as they were, and yet I was as enslaved as them, banned and banished, imprisoned and tortured, separated from husband and children. How different was my condition from that of your enslaved matriarchs. Women of Afro-America, yours is a story of survival and more. Oppression breeds oppression. The oppressed remain trapped in poverty. For generations, the humiliations of want keep them fettered in hunger and pain. But you have overcome the spiral of oppression. You have empowered yourself. Your very presence today, your unity, your solidarity manifests your power to stand liberated, and credit to the human race. In your veins, your hearts, and your souls run the blood and spirit of your ancestral matriarchs, who lived in the 18th century and 19th century, kidnapped from their African shores, born in slavery, raised in slavery, violated in slavery, who broke their chains and burst their shackles, and mounted anti-slavery platforms and founded anti-racist associations, the National Association of Colored Women, the Federation of Afro-American Women, the Black Women's Suffrage Movement, and resounded their voices in prose and poem to reverberate the song of freedom. You have made us proud in Africa through your long line of freedom fighters, Francis Harper, Lucy Delaney, Matty Jackson, Susie King Taylor, Pauline Elizabeth Hopkins, Annie Burton, Kate Duckgold, Harriet Jacobs, Lucy Terry, Phyllis Wheatley, Old Elizabeth. The list enters into the 20th century. On and on the names accumulate of Afro-American heroines, those recorded and those not. The unsung strugglers who swore their children would never be slaves, those of whom Francis Harper wrote, "By law, they torture and chase a woman whose crime is the hue of her face, with her step on the ice and her arm on her child. Oh, poverty, danger, and death she can brave, for the child of her love is no longer a slave." Harriet Tubman, who ran her underground train and rescued 300 slaves from the South and 756 more as a guerrilla leader in the Union Army, piloting black troops up the Combahee. "I will give every drop of blood in my veins to free them," she said, and she did. Sojourner Truth, who escaped from slavery and against all odds fought to free her 5-year-old son, kidnapped and enslaved. "When I left the house of bondage," she said, "I left everything behind." But she stepped into the double oppression of race and woman, and she wrote, "Aren't I a woman? That men over there say a woman needs to be helped into carriages and lifted over dishes and have the best place everywhere. Nobody ever helped me into carriages or over mud puddles or gives me a best place. Aren't I a woman? I have plowed and planted, and no man could heed me. I have borne 13 children and seen most of all sold into slavery. And when I cried out a mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me. And aren't I a woman?" That little man in black there say, "A woman can't have as much rights as a man, 'cause Christ wasn't a woman." Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Men had nothing to do with him. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down, all alone, together, women ought to be able to turn it right side up again. And that was Sojourner Truth. And to her question, "Can't women together turn the world right side up again?" our answer is here today. Of course we can. Of course we will. And of course we are doing it. And how do we in Africa see you, Afro-American women? I give you your praise in the words of our best black writer, our sister Bessie Heard. She wrote about the woman from America who came to her village in Botswana, and this is what she wrote. Her big, strong stride has worn the pathway of the village flat. She is everywhere about because she is a woman, resolved and unshakable in herself. She is the most oddly beautiful person I have ever seen. Every cross current of the earth seems to have stopped in her and blended into an amazing harmony. She has a big dash of Africa, a dash of Germany, some Cherokee, and heaven knows what else. Her feet are big, and her body is as tall and straight and strong as a mountain tree. Her neck curves up high, and her thick black hair cascades down her back like a wild and tormented stream. Her mounting and shouting matches with authority are the terror and sensation of the village. It has come down to this: either the woman is unreasonable or authority is unreasonable. And everyone in his heart would like to admit that authority is unreasonable. She is a new kind of America, or even maybe will be a new kind of African, to come from a world of chicken, hamburgers, television, escalators, and whatnot, to a village mud hut and a life so tough where most you can afford to eat is ground millet and boiled meat. Sometimes you cannot afford to eat at all. Always you have to trudge miles for a bucket of water and carry it home on your head, and do all this with loud, ringing, sprawling laughter. Black people in America care much about Africa, and she has come here on her own as an expression of that love and concern. Through her, too, one is filled with wonder for a country that breeds individuals about whom, without and within, rushes the wind of freedom. She is a different person who has taken by force what America will not give back to black people. The woman from America loves both Africa and America independently. She can take what she wants from us both and say, damn it, it is a difficult thing to do. That was Bessie Heard, who died prematurely. We concur with her. Today, as we stand in our countless numbers, I say it is a lovely thing to be African and American, Afro-American. How did you do it? Become two in one, African and American, and you are African and American. You did it by taking both and the best of both continents. Not a single name I have listed of yours, forebears in African. They are the names of the masters. Slave names, you may say, but those women made their own names. They converted to Christianity and made Christianity their own. In their worship and their gospel of music, and the nation of Islam recovered Islam from their African roots and made Islam their own. You survive and overcome despite your poverty, because your lives are enshrined in values that are immortal, values that are your own. You gave us black consciousness. You gave us black pride. You made it into your own, our very own. We have a shared destiny, a shared responsibility to save our world from the violence that wrecks it, the tyranny that dehumanizes it, the greed that destroys the God-given values of Islam and Christianity, and all the religions of the world that preserve our democracy, our fraternity, and our humanity. We must conquer the avarice of globalization that threatens to eat up our forests, pollute our air and our waters, destroy our flora and fauna, our cultures and languages, our democracy and our dreams of equality. We confronted the terror of the tyranny in Pretoria in 1952. When we told the white dominator, you touch a woman, you touch the rock. Yes. We sang as we did so in our march to Pretoria. The man called Strydom did not listen. He touched us. He shot and killed our children in 1976. But he died. He ruled the day. We rule today. But it doesn't mean that if we rule, we cannot make mistakes. It does not mean we rule right. We too can go wrong. The wrongs multiply, and when they become overbearing, we too rule the day. A million women, a countless women, American women, women of Asia and Australia's, women of the world, unite to restore peace and prosperity so that the 21st century will be the best mankind has known. We march into the 21st century with all our might as black women, and we say, Amandla! Amandla!
Winnie Madikizela Mandela of South Africa, addressing the Million Woman March in October 1997. She was recorded by Dahia Lomax of WBAI-FM, New York. As of 2020, both Winnie Mandela and Dahia El-Sanusi Lomax have passed away. The Million Woman March is now a global movement for Africana women and girls throughout the diaspora. To hear Wings programs again, visit wingsradio.org. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. Wing's sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:58 a.m., Next up at 10 o'clock, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Then at 11, it's The Dirt Bag.
I'm a river hugger. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Valentine's Dip, Saturday, February 15th at 10 a.m. at the Willamette Park Boat Ramp. Participants who jump in the river receive entry into the Big Float 10. This event is brought to you by the Human Access Project,
a volunteer nonprofit dedicated to transforming Portland's relationship with the Willamette River. Again, that's the third annual Valentine's Dip, Saturday, February 15th at 10 a.m. at the Willamette Park Boat Ramp on the west side of the river, 6500 Southwest McAdam Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at humanaccessproject.com and kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
In places like Sri Lanka, where some elephants are free to roam around the edge of the ocean, that just for the pure joy of it, they jump into the sea and they use their trunks as a snorkel. And they can go 20 to 30 miles just for the pleasure of it all.
You were just listening to Ingrid Newkirk, founder and president of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or as most of us know it, PETA. You can hear the rest of her interview with me on Voices for the Animals on Friday, February 28th, 10 a.m. right here on KBOO. Or go to kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals to listen online.
Coming to you from the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Flashpoints. Today we dedicate the entire hour to a discussion of higher education and the neoliberal thinking that increasingly views our colleges and universities as business incubators for the economy and commodifying education. This view judges education and its worth not based upon its contributions to critical thinking, democratic values, and society, but instead whether it can turn a profit or contribute to profit-making.